Hello.
Hello.
Today the visit is in the studio of Emma Ronholm.
Mm-hmm. Herttoniemi, industrial area.
Yes, yeah. Proper artist studio environment, the old industrial areas.
Yes.
What do you do?
I do sculpture and also kinetic art, light art. Let's say like sculpture with different ready-made materials, recycled materials, and I like to kind of have them somehow moving. So I like to use like little motors and have things that spin or move slowly, or also kind of processes, maybe something that changes during the exhibition, something that kind of falls down, or yeah. But a space, three-dimensional works.
And physical also.
Yes, very material.
Which is making it difficult, especially if they move, because...
Yeah. I mean, it's important to know how long they need to work. Because with things moving, especially if you kind of do it yourself, which I like to do, you don't really have any guarantees. They break, they wear out.
Yeah.
And for me, that's kind of part of the fascination that okay, this work is going to be alive for until it's not. But of course, for a museum or if you do a public work, you can't really do that.
How did you become an artist?
I've been an artist since I graduated in 2011. So that makes 10 years plus as an artist. And pretty, I think, like kind of boring traditional way. Like I like drawing as a kid, and then I have an aunt who's an artist who when I was considering kind of what to do after lukio, she told me what it's like in art school, and I was like, whoa,
of course.
Paradise. I want to do that. And then I applied to art school. I did like one kansanopisto, one preliminary year, and then I got into applied to the Academy of Fine Arts, Kuvataide Akatemia. And then I was there and did my...
What did you study there?
Well, the first I was in the painting department, because I think that's also often when you start out, that's what's easy to do, you know, draw and paint.
Yes, that's the most direct way.
Yeah, like if you're interested in making pictures and stuff, that's the first step. And then I changed... Then I kind of drifted towards sculpture by starting to make collage, and then I changed to sculpture when I did my master. I did the bachelor. I finished in painting, and then I did the master in sculpture. But in Kuvataide Akatemia, at least at the time, I think still now, it doesn't matter very much. Like, if you're in the painting department, you can still do classes from all the other departments, and you don't necessarily, the students in that department don't necessarily need to do painting. It's more kind of course, then the teachers and the peers, if you want to talk with people who do the same kind of things as you yourself, it makes sense to maybe change the department, but otherwise you don't have to.
Well, that's nice, yeah, because in the academy when I was studying, it was very, very fixed. Like, you start in this, and then they put the label on your face, like, this is what you're doing.
Mm.
Which, yeah, I don't think it's very productive.
Mm. Was that in...
In Sofia, when I studied.
Like
the bachelor.
Yeah. I did an exchange in Prague when I was in the bachelor. But I think it was a different system, because there was a professor and you kind of worked always like in the studio of one professor. But at least where I was, it was a kind of a printmaking studio, but the students were still doing different kinds of things, even though it was in the...
I guess it depends, kind of where, what kind of luck you're gonna have with the surrounding.
Yeah.
You said you had an aunt who was an artist, so I guess your family was pretty relaxed about you becoming one as well, or were they?
Yes, Yeah, actually, I have a lot of artists in my family. My great grandparents on my mother's side were like an artist couple,
Ooh.
painting the man painting a lot of portraits and teaching in the academy, and then the wife was also painting flowers. So.
Like a standard female artist in like a century ago.
Yeah, so kind of a traditional artist, but of course that was in the beginning of the
Okay.
20th century. So, and then my mother studied art history, and so there was very much understanding and kind of encouragement,
Okay.
although nobody said like, oh, you should become an artist. It was more like, maybe you shouldn't become an artist even if you like drawing.
So you were studying sculpture in your master's,
Yes.
and then you just kept doing only sculpture, or do you do painting still?
No, I'm expecting that maybe one day I will start making painting again. It hasn't happened yet. I started making. I do still draw. I've made some illustration work, if somebody asks me. And now I started as a kind of a hobby, getting into printmaking again, and it's really fun. But yeah, that's the extent of that.
And what are you usually doing there in that domain, like theme-wise?
In sculpture or in
Is it different?
painting, printmaking.
I mean, I'm not talking about some commission that you might get, but like
Yeah.
your personal work, your practice.
There is actually, now that I think about it, quite a distinction in this kind of sculpture painting. Okay, what like for me, they have very different meanings. And kind of also one reason why I stopped painting was that when I was painting, I was doing it from a kind of illustration point of view almost, because when I was younger, especially, I was also writing a lot, and I really enjoyed developing stories and kind of writing fiction. So then the painting was kind of very much creating images and worlds and kind of stories, so figurative. And the Academy of Fine Arts at the time, and maybe also now, and so on, was very kind of anti that kind of stuff. This kind of painting is, real contemporary painting is about kind of the act of painting and the gesture and the surface and this kind of
Large
more.
and abstract.
Yes. Of course, not everybody was doing that. You don't have to do that, but it's kind of like the interesting, if you want, if you're really into painting, and that's what you investigate. And I was kind of like, yeah, I'm not that interested. And then instead I became interested in these different materials, and that's how I ended up in sculpture. So when I do sculpture, it's still a lot about actually the materials, and I like to, I don't know, I like to work in a very kind of concrete way. Like, I like experimenting with materials, both as kind of like texture and kind of how they feel and so on, but also kind of what happens to them. So I think I need an example now. Concretely.
Possibly.
Yes. Well, this is from way back, but kind of that's when I maybe. The shift when I started working this way, I did a video. I haven't been doing video since then, almost, but I did a video of a dishcloth, this kind of spongy cloth that absorbs a lot of water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not the thin web-like one, but this kind of
Yeah, a
thicker.
bit thicker than
Yeah.
that they sell in different colors, like the
Yes.
yeah.
It was like an animation, or like I had this dishcloth, I filmed it, so it was dry, and then I sprayed water on it, and then I let it dry, and then I sprayed water on it again, and then the video was kind of an animation of this movement. And then when you speed it up, this movement is kind of like it's flying, or it's breathing, or it's doing this kind of odd thing, and kind of when it dries, it puts itself in always slightly different position, so it's kind of an, it looks alive. So that, for instance.
You had the movement already back then.
I did, yeah, yeah. So that was kind of early. And then, so I still do that kind of thing. like I became interested in this dishcloth because of also the colors and this kind of interesting texture. And then just experimenting and finding this like, okay, this is interesting. And then the theme of the work or the feeling of the work is kind of comes unconsciously. Yeah, well, I think that's the anartistic process for most artists, that you do all kinds of stuff and it's also accidentally things happen. And then...
there is not one pattern of how things have to happen, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But kind of all kinds of things happen and coincidence is important, but of course then you as an artist make a choice. Like, aha, okay, now this happened. Is this interesting? Like, yeah. Do I keep this? And of course that's an artistic choice. And then if it happens, like if the accident that happens has some kind of like meaning or emotional potency, or how to say it, then it becomes a work. And usually, long reply, usually then the theme that I subconsciously work with is the passing of time and change as this kind of thing that we human beings have to, or all things alive have to live with. That
I would say it's not subconscious, because you very consciously formulated it in a
yeah,
sentence.
That's true. Yeah, but okay. But yeah. I don't make a work thinking, okay, now I want to say something about the passage of time and change and aging. But it's more like when that kind of turns up in an accidental process in a material, then I find it interesting.
So you're leaving the process to guide you, more or less.
More or less.
And what are you working on at the moment?
At the moment, I'm doing this commissioned work for a school. That's been going on for a while now, because it's late. It's this, they're constructing or renovating and constructing a building, and there has been with Corona and things delays. So that's been going on for a while, and that's challenging in new ways, because that's a piece that's supposed to be there for like forever, and I often work with materials that don't last. So now I've been with the things in the background, these like metal plates.
Yeah.
Are for that work.
It's not exactly a mural, but it's not exactly a sculpture piece, or how would you define it?
Well, I suppose it's a sculpture. It's gonna be, it's more like this,
like
hanging
these
things.
Hanging ones.
Yeah,
okay.
It's gonna be a bit like this kind of mobile.
That's definitely sculptural.
Yeah. But consisting of these flat metal pieces.
Oh, some nice lighting to that would make it very.
Yes. Coming up, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah. When should it be ready?
If everything goes well, it's going to be ready in November. And then I just found out, or I'm going to have a solo exhibition in a year, which I'm really happy about, because I haven't had because of this, and because I got a kid, and because of Corona and stuff, I haven't had a solo exhibition since 2020.
Where is it going to be?
In Huuto.
Ah, Kalasota. Congrats.
Thank you. And... and I need deadlines to make. I need deadlines, and I need a space. I need to know where the work is going to be exhibited, almost, to make it. So I'm really looking forward to making new things.
Oh, really? You don't do works without a specific space in mind?
Almost no. Hmm. I mean, I have, but then they kind of, they're a bit orpo. In Finnish, you would say like the kind of orphan.
I was just gonna say, wasn't that orphan?
Yes, but I mean, because I always need to imagine them somewhere, and then if they end up somewhere, usually what happens is, even if I make a work for like a gallery space and it's there, and then later it's exhibited somewhere else and it works fine, but if I do a work without knowing where it's gonna be, somehow it misses like focus or something. It's odd.
Which month was the exhibition going to be?
in April, May.
April, May.
Yeah.
That's very nice timing because it's already getting like springy.
Yeah.
People are more likely probably to move around and not just stay at home.
I'm happy with it, yes.
And it's going to be sculpture you're going to be exhibiting there.
Probably, but I don't know. What I really love...
You have time, you have time.
Well, no, actually not that much, but yeah, what I really love doing is to... I haven't done that yet because this is new, but to go in the space and to kind of envision. But yeah, it's almost certainly going to be three-dimensional works, but...
We'll see. You said you had a kid.
Yes.
How did that affect your work? Did it?
It did, and partially that's what I'm kind of hoping, what I think I'm going to find out when I do this exhibition in a year, because I don't really know yet. I mean, I know it affects my working in that I have much less time, and I've had to kind of course, the changes, it changes very much your everyday life. So I have to kind of be more structured, which is good for me. Because before I was just working sometimes all the time and sometimes never. So now I need to get used to these limitations. So deadline is closing up. I cannot work all night necessarily.
How old is he or she?
She's now 3.
Still needs a lot of attention and time.
Yes. But still much more independent than when she was 6 months.
Do you involve somehow your family, friends, otherwise in your work?
Not especially, although of course help is sometimes needed. And it's really wonderful to have colleagues. Like here, the studio is shared at the moment with 2 other artists. And in the beginning, this was mostly a question of saving money, but it's really wonderful, I've noticed, to sometimes encounter other people in your studio. For a while, I had this 5-year artist apartment in Jätkäsaari that had the studio with the apartment.
I have heard about those.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them.
It was really luxurious to be so in the center, and I had a kind of a big apartment all to myself, and that studio was pretty small, but still. Mm. And in many ways that was great, but I kind of also came to the conclusion that no, it's not so great, that it was too close, that it's good to have this passage between home and workplace. And also that is kind of it helps so much when you're a bit stuck to have somebody to talk with. And I sometimes don't even realize that I'm stuck until I talk to somebody, and then it just resolves like this because you say it out loud and the other person reacts to it, and then it's like, oh yeah, of course, that's what I need to do.
I usually ask people about being stuck and how they solve that, if they've experienced it, but you were ahead of time with it. So I don't have to ask that anymore.
Well, it's a really great question because I often feel that I'm stuck, and usually it helps to talk with someone, but not always, and often the problem can be that you don't have the right person to talk with.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that like that, because today I started this peer-to-peer mentoring program, which is how actually we met a few months ago with you, because you did it last year, and we just randomly met and talked about it. But the organizers there, they said the same thing, that was the reason they started that program in the first place. It's because they know the importance of artists having somebody to talk to, especially in moments when you feel stuck in your process.
Yeah. But it's hard, because at least in our, also in our peer mentoring, and often with people around you, even colleagues, you talk about kind of life. And of course, as an artist, often you're stuck in a kind of like, I don't have any money, should I get a job, should I stop being an artist? But it's much harder to get that kind of peer help with your kind of artistic ambition, because that's really also, it's like a really hard question, like if you're making a work, or kind of, is my art still interesting? Am I kind of starting to just repeat old ideas? Should I kind of push myself more? And how can somebody tell you, or like,
I guess you need to probably talk with them for a longer period of time, so they can know you better and your work.
Yeah. And of course, that's why it's so wonderful to have old artist friends and colleagues. But even with, even for them, it's not an easy question.
We are going to talk about the studio a little bit more, a little bit later. But before that, how do you sustain your practice right now?
Well, the last year I was lucky enough to have money. Like what do you say in English? A scholarship?
Grant?
A grant. Yes, I was lucky enough to have a grant. And I have been actually fortunate in that I have often had grants. Not all the time, but enough to be able to continue my artistic practice. Then I've also had various odd jobs, some of which have been very nice. For instance, before 2020 and Corona and the kid and the commission and so on.
In the previous life.
In my previous life, I was working for many years as a guide in Kiasma.
Really?
That was really nice, although not very remunerative. That's not really enough to sustain an artistic practice all by itself, but it was really nice. And I've been writing some critique or about art, which is also super nice and not very well paid. And then I was working in a post office for a while, and I have a few times I've sold artworks, but that is very rare, because the things that I do are not very, very well suited for kind of private.
You can't put it in your living room type of situation.
No.
It sounds like you have been at least somewhat around the field that you are as an artist as well, which is good.
Mm. Yeah. I also I don't mind having this kind of wider perspective. Although it was interesting when I started working as a guide in the museum, I noticed in the beginning that it's a very different attitude, because when I was as a kind of artist going around looking at exhibitions and artworks, I of course had this very subjective point of view, as kind of like, and much more critical, like kind of, oh, that's rubbish, like why do they show these kinds of things, and you know, I don't, that's not interesting, or this is interesting, and kind of I can steal this idea, huh? But then as a guide, you need to be kind of, you need to find everything interesting and present it in an interesting way, even if you don't like it yourself. And that's actually not that hard, but I think it kind of changes a little bit, gets into your brain as well.
I would assume that would
be a good thing.
Be a good thing for it. Yeah, because it's...
Yeah.
You silence that inner critic a little bit and start to see more positives into different artworks.
Yeah. Maybe my fear, or just this kind of thought that's kind of, maybe this is not only good if it means that I become, in a bad way, less critical of my own ideas. If you have this kind of like, oh, everything can be interesting, then it's maybe not great for your own work. Well, I mean, you need to be...
Depends, yeah. Depends how much you apply that to yourself.
Yeah. It's a balance. Because, of course, it's very good to be open and kind of let all kinds of ideas and things up. But then you need to, at some point, be critical to kind of make it a... condense it into a good artwork as well.
Yeah, but that is also a very subjective category, good art.
Yeah.
But good art for you, of course, because you would be the one making.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you thinking about people who are going to be viewing it when you make your art, or do they matter?
Yeah, I do. But from the point of view of, I think a lot about the experience of kind of encountering the artwork. And then, of course, that needs the other person to be there. I like to do this kind of quite making more of a situation than just an object.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess with sculptural works, that's more prevalent because
yeah,
a painting is, there's a lot less options of how you can approach a painting.
Mm. Painting can expand, but yeah, not the as a definition, yes.
But not as, you don't take them into account so much about the actual subject matter of the piece.
Oh. The audience.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Although, I mean, I've never done it's kind of very personal, revelatory works, and maybe that's also. Maybe that's not good. Maybe I should do more scandalous personal works. But but kind of, I think there's in my pieces there is a level of abstraction, and I like. Kind of my aim in a way is to make works that are so simple that you kind of get something immediately, or like everybody can get something out of them, but then depending on where you are and how much you like to think and delve into them, you can kind of get, they have layers and you can, yeah, they can get very complex as well, but that there is kind of a first layer of something quite simple. Which you could maybe interpret as, I think, very much about the viewer, because that means that they're kind of constructed in such a way that the viewer, even if the viewer is very lazy or stupid, they can still enjoy it somehow.
I think that depends on whether you would really have intention to do that, because the viewer would still be able to enjoy it or not.
Yeah,
they can be simple and you don't have to necessarily have thought about the viewer.
But it's, I think it's in, if I think about the viewer, it's more like kind of internalized. So when I'm making it, I'm not thinking of the viewer, but I think in during these years you come to develop a kind of your own artistic philosophy or your kind of idea of what this meeting between the viewer and the artwork is and how it works, and then you make something for that context, so then you have thought about the viewer before, if not in that moment.
Okay. You said you were writing about art at some point. Did that help your personal practice to be able to put things in words better?
Yeah. Yes, I think it's a very good way to kind of study art as well, because when I started writing about art, I noticed this very big difference that if I went to see a gallery show without writing about it, it's more like kind of, And then when I wrote about it, or when I sat down to write about it and kind of formalized, verbalized, then I was like, oh yeah, actually, of course, that's, there is this layer and there's that layer and there is this kind of juxtaposition of blah, blah, blah. And
you pay more attention.
Yeah. You pay more attention and you kind of also notice or come to think about how the artwork is kind of constructed and how it does what it does, instead of just kind of receiving the effect.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that it's like that, of course. Just I was always very reluctant to writing. I really do not like to write. But I can see the value in that.
Do you have a kind of stated philosophy that you don't want to write about your art? Or
no, I'm forcing myself to write about it. I am trying to push myself to do that, but it's not a very pleasurable and easy process. But I know that it's good to do.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, artists, for whom it's very hard, because it's kind of two different. Also, I think making art is very intuitive and subconscious, and then when you've
writing about it intellectualizes it, and yeah. that takes so much energy.
yeah. For me, I think it kind of it's easy because I've always been writing, so they kind of the way I do art is pretty close to the way I write somehow. Or this kind of intellectualization or verbalizing is somehow there even when I make images, although I'm not very conscious about it, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, because it sounded like you're letting go of that and just more when you just let the process happen and you experiment with stuff. It's but then maybe it's just a mixture of things.
Yeah, it is. Now that you say it, it's true. Didn't sound like that.
Do you have some specific ways of how you get into the work? Some routines that you do? How does that process go?
I think many different routines. Like if I'm starting from scratch, part of the routine is searching for new material in a very literal way, like going to flea markets and maybe finding something that's kind of like, or just seeing somewhere some material that inspires me. And then having it around the studio, so that when I'm working on different things, my eye might get caught on some material, some stuff that I have lying around. I'm just kind of like, maybe I can use this. And then it goes on. If I already have an idea and kind of working on it further, developing it, then no, not that many routines. I like to listen to music when I don't need to think.
Yeah.
But that phase usually comes very late.
Do you have an idea of how much time, like percentage-wise, of the whole process of doing something? How long does it take to conceptualize about it? How long does it take to actually make it? What would be longer?
Oh, usually it like tiny, tiny, tiny percentage to make it. Often depending a little bit on, I've done some projects that have been very laborious and took a long time to make, but usually it's like chick, chick, chick. There's like experimentation and kind of things bubbling in the back of your head for like months and months and months. And then once I kind of get it, what I need to do, then I do it in like 2 days.
Some time ago, I started asking people about the role of social media and how much they use it for, self-promoting purposes and stuff. So are you using all those pesky tools?
I should do it more. I have an Instagram account that I haven't been updating, that I update very seldom. And I have a Facebook account that's mostly just for art stuff. And a website. Now, I don't know if the website, if that's kind of already old-fashioned, but that I kind of take a certain pride or find the time to kind of keep that in order and update and so on. Also because it's nice to see, to have an kind of an archive for myself.
I think the website is very, very important. And especially, I mean, it depends how, of course, you have it set up, but just relying on Instagram, for example, you're so dependent on that platform, and something happens there, and if that's your only outlet, what are you going to do? Like, somebody hacks your account and there it is, gone.
Yeah.
And the website, you have more control over how it looks like. And
yes, and also I've noticed now, since it's been already more than 10 years that I've been doing this, that in my Instagram, of course, I mostly, and Facebook, I mostly put what I'm doing at the moment. And then sometimes I realize, like, okay, somebody who just looks at my Instagram is not like has a very different idea of what I'm doing, because what I've been doing the last 2 years doesn't say that much about kind of everything I do or want to do. So yeah, I also find websites important? Because I mean, it's kind of, you need to have this as a
I mean, from my personal viewpoint, for this podcast, I don't know if I could do things without people's websites, because I'm really, before I send you an email, hey, do you want to participate? I'm checking your website. I very much want to know what you do.
Yeah. No. That's true. Yeah. I agree. When I started out, my first website I did when I was in school, in the academy. But then for a while there was still this phase of having a portfolio in like a folder that you could take with you and show people. That was cute.
Oh.
But in a way worse, because then there was this kind of, oh, I need to print high quality pictures of my works and new works. And
yeah, it took more effort, for sure. Mm. Then you probably update it a little more rarely than, because the website, it's very easy to update.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to the studio then. The studio, you said you are three people here.
Yes.
It's pretty spacious. It could take more people.
Yeah. Possibly.
How big is it?
It's around maybe 45 square meters, which is not much for three people. But
the ceilings are pretty high.
The ceiling is high, which is great. And it has these big windows. So it's in the evening, afternoon and evening especially, there's a lot of light coming from the windows. And
in the summer months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we like it.
How long have you been here?
I've been here kind of on and off since actually maybe also 10 years, not more, but because I was, or maybe more, no, 2012 I think I was already here.
So that's now more than 10 years.
That's more than 10 years, but I had this 5-year interval when I was not here, when I had the artist apartment.
Oh, yeah.
Then I was away from here and then I came back. But the people have partially changed. But what works really well is that it's shared, but we don't have this very clearly defined, like we don't have walls and things like that's your corner and this is your corner. But when you're here, we try to keep this open space in the middle.
Yeah, and it feels bigger that way, of course. If
yeah,
you put walls, it will be very enclosed.
Yeah, and we're all working with three-dimensional works, and sometimes make very big installations. So it's really important for every one of us to sometimes be able to build really big stuff. Mm. And amazingly, these 10 years, it never happened that two people would at the same time need to build something really big. It's always been like
that's a good coincidence.
Yes.
Like good timing.
yeah.
What is your favorite element of the space?
Well, I mean the height. Yeah, I noticed when I had the other studio, which was a kind of normal height apartment building, that it limits your ideas. Like the space you have to use, there it was really hard to imagine like, oh, the gallery space is 3 meters high, what am I going to put on this wall? And then if you're in a space that's only 2.3 or 7 or whatever. No,
2.3 would be very short.
But I think in like apartments, it's not, maybe a bit more. It's 2 point something, the kind of standard.
Yeah, but imagine if there's a person who's 2 meters long, and then 2.3 is the ceiling. And
maybe it's 2.6.
Maybe.
Which is not far from 3, but, well.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the amount of space affects you.
Yeah. And the windows and the view are really, really nice.
Do you prefer to have a studio by yourself or to be with other people?
No, I prefer to be with other people. But of course, it needs to, for that to work, then people need to be the right people. So
I guess.
Yeah. And, but I mean, in a way, I don't have that much experience because I've always been here. With
after you graduated, you came here.
Yes.
Wow.
And then, yeah, and then I had the 5 years with my own studio, which, as I said, was in a way really nice, but in other ways, meh. I think I prefer the current situation. And well, then I've been living. Sometimes I've been abroad and so on. But when I've had a studio in Helsinki, it's always been here, or then in Jätkäsaari.
You got very lucky with your choice in the beginning, I guess. It's just like right away.
Yeah, let's see how long we can stay here. I probably need to be to do some remodeling and things. It's a pretty old building.
Well, they haven't said anything yet, I guess. Still, like,
there are discussions. Within maybe 2 years, then they're gonna need to do things.
But would they kick you out, like, permanently or just for the duration of the renovations?
Probably just for the duration of the renovation. But easily the rent is gonna go up, and if it's the renovation might take a lot of time, and I mean, nobody knows for sure, but this area, this Herttoniemi industrial area, is also changing really quickly. They're building a lot of apartment buildings, like already just behind that building, those blocks are going to all become apartments. And
yeah, I guess that connection, the new bridge that they have there in Lajasalo, is kind of raising the interest here.
Yeah, and also because, I mean, I actually just quite recently moved nearby when I changed house. And it's a it's a great area because it's just by the metro and it's kind of actually not far from the center while still being not in the center.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody who needs to find a place in Helsinki, that's kind of a little bit cheaper, close to like the sea and the nature, and with good communications.
Everything here is close to the nature, come on.
Yeah, well, nature and nature, more and less nature.
I mean, if you think about some other cities here, it's a nature city, this one.
Well, that is true.
I forgot to ask you about the materials you're using, because you were saying maybe a couple of times how the materials are important.
Mm.
What kind of materials do you use in your work? I see a lot of some ceramic tests over there.
Yes, although that's misleading because those are actually not mine.
Oh.
Those are Lena's, who also has her studio here. Those ones behind the camera are more like my kind of materials. I use a lot of plastic, actually. I like to use trash. And objects. What I've been using recently, I've been using CDs and buttons and plastic bags.
You should watch then the next episode of the podcast, which is coming up on next Friday.
Uh-huh.
Yes, because my guest in that episode is also working with trash.
Okay, I will do that.
Or trash.
Yeah, I read somewhere about objects, and how a kind of an object, everyday objects, become visible when they become obsolete, when they start to become obsolete. So that, for instance, electric cables are, as long as they were necessary, you accept them. Like, of course, you need to have cables all over. And then when Wi-Fi technology and kind of wireless charging and these kinds of things become more common, then you start paying attention to all these cables all over the place, and they're so annoying and they're so ugly. And I noticed that the materials I work with are usually those materials. So
the obsolete ones.
Yeah. Obsolete or becoming obsolete ones. Not only, but I mean, the CDs was very clearly this kind of material that all of these CDs, and everybody's getting rid of their CDs, and they're kind of, they're really beautiful, and I'm sure I could make something out of this. Although I'm a bit sad to say that's kind of ongoing. I don't feel I've found the way to use CDs yet. In a kind of a...
At some point, I think there was this wave of reels or like short videos of other sorts with kind of, look what I did with the CDs, or this is how you can use CDs or something.
Yeah.
To that.
I think that with social media, there is so much of everything, so it feels like...
Yeah, maybe I was just riding that wave for a while. Just fed me that information. True.
And, but also the works I made with plastic bags was very clearly connected to this, because that was in 2017, was it? I made this light work with plastic bags. And those were just the years when there was this whole discussion about plastic bags are so bad for the environment and we must stop using plastic bags, and they forbid the use of, like, you couldn't give out free plastic bags in the shops anymore. And
yeah, and now they're not allowed to give those that have handles. I mean, you can still you put your fruits in a plastic bag, but it doesn't have handles anymore.
It doesn't?
No, I don't think it does.
Oh. I need to look next time. But these biological ones, I think, have handles.
Do they? Maybe because they're biodegradable or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so then that kind of activated... Like, it activates the gaze, and then you start to think about plastic bags, and then it was like, ooh. Plastic bags are really pretty. That work was about... On the most superficial level, that work was about plastic bags being very pretty. I made a kind of a stained glass window with plastic bags.
Was there some environmental angle to the work, or is it more of fascinating material to work with?
To be completely honest,
no,
I don't care about the environment. No, that's not true either, but I'm kind of... I mean, my choice of material is, of course... it also comes from me not wanting to kind of buy and order new plastic or kind of be part of this system, but I kind of want to use in interesting ways the things that are already there and that nobody needs, or it's kind of becoming unnecessary. But I'm mostly interested in kind of reflecting on our time and our world, and I feel that the materials talk about that.
What better material than the plastic bag?
Yeah. To talk about life and our time.
Do you store all your work here, or do you have some other place to store it also?
I try not to store my works here. There are a few, but I don't really have a lot of other space for it either. I have this small, like, kellari komero. I also try to make work that don't take up that much space.
With sculpture, that I find is a little tricky.
It is, yeah. It is. But that's maybe why I've kind of ended up doing either site-specific installation that is then kind of dismantled or maybe stored for a while, the materials, and then I get rid of them, or then sculptures that are kind of not very big.
I wanted to ask you about DIY, because you have stated that you are very interested in that. Mm. How important is it for you to have worked on your own work, like, that you have done it by yourself?
It's very important, although there are exceptions. If I start with the it's very important part, then for me, the interest of making a work is a kind of the learning curve often. That I want to I learn a new technique, or I want to produce a certain kind of movement or a certain kind of effect, and it's not obvious how to do it. And then I experiment, and then I try, and then I kind of have this aha moment. And then it's kind of like, woohoo, now it works. And in many ways, I would like for that to, in a way, be the content of the work, that the viewer can see the work, and then they can be like, aha, that's a kind of interesting solution to this, or like, it's made that in somehow the content of the work is how it is made, or the process behind it. But of course, not only, because I also subconsciously intellectualize everything. Sometimes I've also made, like, for instance, this commissioned work that I'm making now. If the work needs to last and be very big or need tools that I don't have, it's necessary to have somebody else make it. And often when that is the case, it looks much better, which is a bit sad. But of course, that's also something to embrace as part of the work.
Then it depends what is more important for you. Is it the craftsmanship of the final outcome, or is it an idea that you put into a shape, or a balance between the two?
And well, I mean, obviously it's not about the craftsmanship, because I'm one of these artists who are not an expert in any one technique, which can also be frustrating, but also very makes life interesting. So I need to somehow, well, so that becomes part of the work, that I am not the expert on the technique I'm using, that this is kind of, they're always in some way like prototypes and experiments. And for me, that's a very beautiful thing, because I really like this that it's easy. It's also more like open to sharing when you're kind of like, whoo, I found this really cool thing, and not like, I have mastered this skill the last 30 years and look how good I'm now. It's more kind of democratic, which is why I like DIY. Mm-hmm. That kind of as a philosophy. Also for me, I noticed that it's and I think for many other people as well, it's hard to have unlimited possibilities. And if you commission your work, if you have it made by somebody else, that means if you have enough money, you can do anything. And of course, that's kind of great, but it's also like kind of, well, what do you do? So for me, one interesting, you have to limit yourself somehow. And I find that one interesting limitation is kind of, what are you able to do on your own with your tools? It's true that it's actually not necessary for the to make an interesting artwork. I don't necessarily have to do it all by myself. For the viewer, maybe it doesn't matter that much. It just becomes a different kind of artwork. But of course, the idea needs to be clear. If you don't make it by yourself, you need to be even more clear on what you want to do, because it's more fun if you can discover it while you're doing it. But if you can't work like that, then you need to somehow discover it before.
I got a bit entangled here in the
discovery. Yeah, I know. I noticed that this became a messy phrase. Yeah.
Do you go to exhibitions?
Yes, I really enjoy going to exhibitions. Recently, I haven't been going to exhibitions, which is sad. I want to start over. I have started again with doing. I think the best thing is doing these rounds of galleries with some colleagues and friends, and then you can look at the art and talk about it and talk about life and then have a coffee and this set.
Would you prefer to go to the opening or just in some other time?
In some other time, but also openings can be really great too.
Where would you usually go? What are places that you
Galleries or
yeah
I think now in there's actually some new galleries that I haven't been to yet, but in Helsinki. But usually the unions, the Sculptor Anteam and Hippolyte and this, and then and Huuto and Forum Box and Anha Wein Forsblom and Helsinki Contemporary and yeah. So there's kind of
Helsinki. It's like a path.
It's a path
from one to the other.
Yes.
Although Huuto nowadays is not exactly on that path because it's
yes. Now that it's in Kalasatama, but there has been formed a new path in Kalasatama that I haven't much explored. But also Kohta often has really good exhibitions, and before it was harder to get there. That it was kind of the only gallery that was in Kalasatama, but now there's a few. So
I have also noticed that. Before I would very rarely go to Kohta, although I should be because it has very nice exhibitions, but now it's easier to go there because okay, there you can see a couple of things.
Yeah. Well, I really enjoy this kind of Helsinki gallery scene because it's it works so well that it's small enough that if you take one afternoon and walk, if it's nice weather, and you kind of just can walk through all of them, and it's not too much, but it's also not too little, and it's not.
I think if you take them all in one day, it might feel a bit too much.
Yeah, maybe a few times.
Yeah, a couple of walks. Are there some specific artists that you follow their work that are inspiring to you? They don't have to be from the scene here. They can be somewhere else or dead.
Yeah. There's many, but I'm not really great with names, and maybe my memory is bad in this specific way that I kind of absorb impressions, but then I don't necessarily remember who it was and where I saw it and when.
But you can also think about it and let me know afterwards.
Yeah,
because I'm doing this on the website of the podcast, this list of
okay,
people who inspire other people.
Okay, well then I will send you a list because then it's gonna be
Are there some other places of inspiration for you, or books or movies or something?
Yes.
Good.
Most of my inspiration comes from that's not from the art. Other artworks is from basically everyday life. Since I mean that's the materials I work with as well, so kind of this also just that kind of interesting phenomenons that I notice happening in a cup of tea or whatever things of like, well actually urban, since I'm in Helsinki, so urban stuff on the street and trash and shops. Yeah, shops. That's kind of odd to admit or think about, but yeah, I mean like flea markets and these kind of cheap tokmannis and things can be very inspiring.
There are so many flea markets in this city. It's
great.
Yeah. You can go treasure hunting every day to a different place.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean for instance, that's one of many, but still one artist that has influenced me is for instance Anu Tuominen, and because I was thinking about this kind of concept actually of a flea market artist. That's a thing. Like she, do you know her work?
No, I don't.
Okay, because she works a lot with also kind of conceptual handicraft work. But
conceptual handicraft? Wow, that's an amazing term. Seriously, yeah. Wow.
Not only, but she kind of like also crochets and does like knitting.
Maybe
and
I call the episode that.
You can feel free. But she, like a lot, big part of her practice is that she goes to flea markets, and for instance she's been buying these pannulappu, these like things that you use to not get burnt when you take stuff out of the oven.
Uh-huh, okay.
Oven mitts. Yeah. Oven mitts.
I'm not sure what's the English word for that, but yes, I know what you're talking about.
And then have this like work where they're just these oven mitts on the wall but kind of organized by color, and it's very nice. But then that's a very, yeah, that she's an artist who's like, kind of, you couldn't do that kind of art without constantly going to flea markets and collecting the material, like kind of this collecting artist.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm also part of that genre.
That movement.
Somehow. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
It was very nice.
Good. Yeah. Always feels like kind of afterwards you don't really know what you said, but you will discover and hopefully.
But I mean, that's also how I feel, because I discover things when I start to edit the episode. I don't know beforehand how it went. Honestly.
Yeah.